Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Darren Lewis of the Daily Mirror and Adrian Clark of thepremierleague.com. They need a miracle in the Champions League. They're worried about Lincoln City in the FA Cup and they're fifth in the Premier League. Yet the big news at Arsenal is that Arsene Wenger has shaken hands with Alexis Sanchez at training. Sums it up, doesn't it, Darren?
It pretty much does, because another star player at Arsenal is considering his future because of the lack of achievement, because of the mid-season malaise that always sets in, which sees him tumble out of the title race, the Champions League, maybe claw a bit of a ground back in the FA Cup, and the customary strong finish. But essentially, as far as Sanchez is concerned, I think this could be a game changer. I think as far as Sanchez is concerned, he is the club's best player. He didn't play against Liverpool, which for everybody's money is a remarkable
apparently, the press room at Anfield almost went silent. It was like people couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I would imagine they've seen some big decisions and big suicide notes in recent years. But that's, you know, that reminded me of Hullet leaving out Shearer for the Newcastle game against, I think, Sunderland. I think as far as Wenger was concerned, it smacked of panic for me, because even if you fall out with your big players, as we've seen in football, we've seen with Ranieri, your job is to manage your dressing room and your big players. And I think as far as Wenger is concerned, he's losing him, and I think it will result in Arsenal losing the player.
To play devil's advocate, from Wenger's point of view, he had to make a stand of sorts. But do Arsenal need the sort of passion that Alexis represents?
Well, yes, of course they do. I think everybody recognises that Alexis is Arsenal's best player. He's been their player of the season. And anybody that thinks that him causing trouble reportedly behind the scenes at the training ground is down to him being a winner and that everybody else isn't on the same wavelength, then I think they need to think about that, because that won't be true. It won't be true. The Arsenal dressing room is made up of different characters. They've won things at various clubs that they've been at. And I think it's wrong to assume that he is a player that's, you know, made in a certain way, that's inbuilt to win, and the others aren't. That's not true. But if a player is causing one or two issues, if he's misbehaving in training, if he's not listening to the manager, if he walks off, as has been reported at mid-session in a bit of a huff, I think the manager has to do something about it. You can't just ignore it. But I think if he had his chance again, Arsene Wenger, then he wouldn't have left him out of this game.
Or you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in it, aren't you? You either make a stand and drop him and don't take him to Liverpool, and everyone then knows why, because he was basically blamed for what people looked at as a tactical mistake.
There was no tactical justification. I know that Arsene Wenger tried to paint it in that way. I can find no tactical reason to leave Alexis out of the first team, certainly not for a game like that. Do you do nothing or do you act? He made a bold choice. What I would do, I think, is with Alexis, is because he's such a special player, and you just have to find a way to manage him, find a way to make it work, get to the root cause of the problem and deal with it man to man, behind the scenes, and try and reassure him that he is part, that we will do our very best to accommodate your needs. And if at the end of all that, Alexis Sanchez says, I don't want to be here, I don't think Arsenal can match my ambitions, I don't think the players around me are good enough, if he feels like that, at the end of, you've tried everything, then you sell him. It's as simple as that, because players will come and go, the club stays.
PSG, do you think?
I personally think he could yet stay in this country. A player with a year left on his contract, why would some of the cash-rich clubs in this country not suggest to Arsenal that if we give you the money that enables you don't lose him on a free in January, and the power, let's not kid ourselves, is with Sanchez. Mm. Why would, from a business point of view, Arsenal not take it? I find it inconceivable. And all these people suggesting, oh, no, Wenger's in control, he'll let him run his contract down. No way on earth would Arsenal allow a 40, 50, 60 million pound asset to basically walk out of the door for nothing. No chance. I think if one of the clubs in this country, Chelsea, I know, are interested in monitoring the situation very closely. City could, if they wanted to. Mourinho would take him at the drop of a hat at Manchester United. If one of those clubs were to present Arsenal in the summer with 40 to 50 million pounds and say, we'll take him off your hands, Arsenal have to listen to them.
But if that happened, the fans would be over the barricades.
Yeah, they've been there and done that, haven't they?
Well, exactly. That's the reason why it could happen, because Wenger said many times, we will not sell to our rivals. Mm. He basically gift-wrapped Robin van Persie to Manchester United.
Yeah, I think if
Fabregas, cliche.
It's happened so many times, and it hasn't worked, and they've got pelters for it. And for that reason,
they've got money for it.
Yeah, they did, but I don't think that it's about the money at the moment. I think it's about the player. They want to keep him because he's their best player. But ultimately, if he really wants to leave, and if he really wants to, doesn't feel happy at Arsenal, then they have to sell him. But what they have to do is also patch up their relationship publicly so that then they're not held to ransom by
potential suitors. What happens if he says, I don't want to go to PSG, I don't care how much they offer me, I want to stay in this country?
Yes, that is a possibility, and that's what's happened in the past. Robin van Persie is a case in point, isn't it? So, look, the difficult situation lies ahead. But, look, it's in everybody's interest to try and make this relationship work in the short term, get to the end of the season and then reassess. Look, when I watch the team, I don't see, it on a match day, I don't see a massive issue with Alexis Sanchez and the other players. I think there's nothing obvious there. I don't think relationships are irreparable, that's for sure. I just hope that they can get to the end of the season and continue with Alexis's strong performances and then reassess.
Can I just slightly just break down our brief friendship here? I think as far as Sanchez is concerned, he has been consistent in the kind of things he's come out with in the last couple of seasons. At the end of last season, I think it was, he said, look, we shouldn't be happy with just the FA Cup. This is a huge club and we should be aspiring to win the title. He's questioned other players' commitment and he said, look, we shouldn't be satisfied with second, third, fourth best. I think also as far... And so when I look elsewhere in the team, and we've all said it, they have a fantastic squad at Arsenal. Mm. I've been on this show before and said they possibly had their best squad for years.
Yeah,
all
said the
of
same.
The areas
said the same.
Where people have asked Arsene Wenger to buy, he's brought in a world-class goalkeeper, still, Czechs. He's brought in Mustafi at centre-half. He's brought in Xhaka. OK, he can't tackle, but we'll allow him that, you know. Mm. At midfield,
I think the recruitment's been poor. if you look at Xhaka as an example, to me, there have been two busts in the recruitment market this year, and they've both been in North London. Mm. Moussa Sissoko at Tottenham,
yes,
and Xhaka at Arsenal. I don't see what he gives to that team. He hasn't been fulfilling the role, that sort of defensive midfield role that he was bought for at a lot of money.
I would agree with you in so much as the quality of the player. He hasn't lived up to expectations, but Wenger has moved to give himself options in every area of the pitch. And so, for my money, I look at the squad, and you look at the steel, for example, in the squad at Chelsea. You look at the steel in the squad at Spurs, who are vastly inferior in terms of options
depth,
all over the pitch,
yeah.
The depth. But Arsenal don't have that inner belief. They don't have that core. Sanchez, for me, does. And I think that's why it's frustrating. And I was at the Bournemouth game when they drew 3-3. At the end of that game, you're saying that you've not seen it before.
Well, yes.
He was so angry at the end of that game.
And I think this is the root cause of the issue. I think Arsene Wenger doesn't like these public shows of dissatisfaction towards his teammates. You have
but
to be together.
Performing.
But it's not up to Alexis. He's not.
Gallas did the same years ago.
We might rate Alexis Sanchez as a better player than them, but it isn't for him to start slaughtering his teammates. You've got to be in it together in a team, and you can't have one player that is basically letting the whole world know that I'm doing my job. The rest of you are no good. And I think that is something that needs clamping
you
down.
You watch a lot of them, Adrian. Mm. And you've been in dressing rooms yourself. Do you feel that the human chemistry at that football club is right?
Something's not quite right. I must say that from what I see, I don't know. I'm not at the training ground. I'm not an employee of the club. But from what I see, and I watch every single game, that is one area that they're short on compared to their rivals at the moment. I don't see a collective unit that is as strong as some of the other teams. I don't see a happy group of players, if I'm being perfectly honest. I don't see a group of players that are prepared to go the extra mile to cover their mate. Yeah. And that, I think, is at the root cause of Arsenal's issues at the moment. Their talent, I believe, is high. I think it's as high as most of the clubs in and around the top six. But as a collective unit, as a resilient group of players, they're short compared to the others.
You see, this has stopped you if you've heard this one before, because Henry left for the same reason. Fabregas wanted to win things. He left for that reason. Van Persie wanted to leave for that reason. Talented group of players, no steel, no heart, no core, no ability to be able to roll up their sleeves and cope and fight when the going gets tough. That's the problem Arsenal had year in, year out.
Yeah, the other big news today, apart from that handshake, of course, is that BT Sport have sealed the deal so that Champions League now for the next 4 years on the channel, or channels. In that context, the first game, obviously, is Arsenal-Bayern on Tuesday. Is that going to be the same old, same old, a nice heroic 2-0 win?
I don't know. I just don't see Arsenal being able to turn this game around. Bayern Munich are an elite club, and I think we saw an elite team at the moment. Arsenal should be at the same level as Bayern Munich. They should be. And unfortunately, I think what we saw in that first leg is a golfing class at the moment. And perhaps that's why we will see a rebuild of sorts moving forwards after this summer. I think we're probably all guilty in a way of maybe overestimating the qualities of this Arsenal squad, and maybe the Arsene Wenger has as well. If he's a lot, his critics will list a long list of things that he could have done better. But one thing that I think I could say as a fan watching, I feel as if he could have been a bit tougher with the players, been a bit more ruthless when they haven't delivered for him. He loves to trust the guys. He loves to show faith in them, and I think that there have been too many performances where they just haven't delivered. And if he had the chance again, and maybe he would have been a bit more ruthless and dropped a few players and rattled some cages, because they've had it easy. And I think that is one of the reasons why that they're perceived as being soft.
One of the things, you know, that this four-year deal begs is, within that time frame, can you see an English club winning the Champions League again?
Yes. I think Chelsea have the steel. I think they've got the manager. I think they've got the belief to go on and win the Champions League, absolutely.
Because they'll strengthen in the summer, won't they?
They will indeed. Say, I wouldn't be surprised if they were to make a cheeky move for Sanchez. I think they want Kalidou Koulibaly, the centre-half, who's been impressive for Napoli. They'll move to get options in midfield. I think as far as Cesc Fabregas is concerned, they'll try to sign him. They'll have a look, possibly, at replacing him, I should say, even though he wants to stay at the club. Yes, I absolutely think that's the case.
With the rest of this week, the tie that really intrigues me is Barcelona and PSG. 4-0. Barcelona are the sort of team who can get that back.
They are. I think this... it seems bizarre. I've written off Arsenal's chances of coming back against Bayern. I just think that's... they can't keep a clean sheet in that game, or very unlikely to. With Barcelona, you wouldn't be surprised, would you, if they scored four in this game? But PSG were so good in that first game, and I think tactically they nailed it to such a degree, especially in the heart of that midfield with Verratti, at the core of it, Rabiot. It was so strong in there. Actually, I don't know if Barcelona can overturn it, because there was such a gulf in the engine room. So for that reason, I would say that it's unlikely, but if anyone could do it, it's MSN, isn't it?
What's quite interesting is that no team has ever overcome a deficit of four goals or more in the knockout stages of the Champions League. But with Bayern Munich, they have lost only three times all season, none of them at home. And I think they've scored 14 goals in the last three games. They beat Cologne away from home at the weekend easily. I think people are saying heroic second leg win for Arsenal. I don't think so. I think they'll get beaten again in the second leg. PSG have lost four times this season. All of those defeats have come away from home. Mm. And I think you're right. They may not overturn it, but I think Barcelona are at home. Now that Luis Enrique's fate has been sealed, he's leaving at the end of the season, that MSN, they'll give it a proper
and
good
that,
go.
By the way, with Enrique making his decision early, is exactly what Arsenal haven't done with Wenger.
Yes. You know, it's quite interesting. Part of the problem, you know, guys, is that the governance at the club, if you look behind the scenes, David Dean left in 2007. Who's come in that's replaced him? Gazidis has come in. Well, Arsene Wenger signed that off. Dick Law, I mean, apparently the guy who's supposed to be negotiating, well, when Fabregas and Nasri left, I think it was 2011, he was trying to sign Joel Campbell. Look what he's done for the club. Yeah. I think that the governance at the club is a big part of what the problem is. And I think as far as making a decision, how could you leave yourself, just like that situation with Nasri and Fabregas, how could you leave yourself in a situation like this where Wenger could leave at the end of the season and the club appear not to have a clue how to replace
him? On that, I just think uncertainty is never a positive thing in a football club. For a football team, uncertainty has never improved a football team. So I think from Arsenal's point of view, as soon as there is clarity whether the manager is staying or whether he is moving on, the sooner the better, because then footballers like to know what's going on. They like that they're creatures of habit. They don't like to feel in limbo. And I think it's very hard as a team, actually, to perform to your absolute maximum when you're not quite sure who's going to be in charge.
I think there are very clear reasons why they need to sort it out as well. Obviously, Ozil, obviously Sanchez, Oxlade-Chamberlain. There are a number of players at that club whose contracts are running down. They'll have a year left in the summer. Chelsea had Conte signed in the April of last season. They had a clear idea about the direction they were going in for that transfer window in the summer in relation to the players' contracts as well. Arsenal are a rudderless ship at the moment. Basically galvanised and sort of drifting on sentiment towards their manager who gets them in the top four. As we've agreed, that's not good enough.
Looking elsewhere in Europe, Dortmund won down against Benfica. There'll be a lot more attention on Tuchel now, won't there, because of, you know, these persistent Arsenal links. Can you see him coming to England?
Maybe, one day. I wouldn't say he was on the short list for the Arsenal job at the moment. I don't think he has done quite enough at Dortmund. He hasn't really closed that gap between themselves and Bayern Munich. I like him. I like the football that they play. But, I think he probably needs a couple more years. I believe Dortmund will probably overturn that particular tie. They battered Benfica. It was quite funny, really. Aubameyang is a great player, isn't he? I love watching him. He's a top striker, but he just had an absolute stinker in front of goal. I can't imagine that will be repeated on home turf. So I think Dortmund will go through. But Tuchel will manage in the Premier League, I'm sure of it. But I think that would be quite a gamble from Arsenal to take him.
Why?
I just feel that they could possibly do with a change of direction. I think in terms of... I like Allegri. If there was to be a change, I really like the look of Allegri. I like the style of football. I like the tactical aspect of his game. I think he's proven over a longer period than somebody like Tuchel. So if there was to be a change, he would be top of my wish list.
Yeah. Tottenham, a club that you know well, Darren. Pochettino being mentioned in dispatches for Barcelona. Now, there's the obvious complication of his Espanyol background, but could you see him going to Barcelona at some stage?
At some stage, not in the near future, maybe down the line, if some of the big plans and big ambitions that he's got for Spurs are realised.
How big are those ambitions?
Well, they're about to move into a new stadium. He wants to win something with his young side. He wants to win the title. He's tried twice in the last two seasons, come close, but obviously just fallen short. But before his arrival at the club, they were a Europa League club. You know, they were nearly men with their noses pressed up against the glass. Totally changed the mentality at the club. Opened up that pathway for young players to come through to the first team. Got Spurs fans to think differently about the way they perceived their club. And the way that he kind of dismissed the Barcelona links for now last week were quite impressive if you got a Spurs connection. I wrote about it for the Mirror today. Because he said, we are Tottenham Hotspur. You know, we are a huge club. We've got fantastic players. We play exciting football. We've managed to get in between Chelsea and the other clubs with better resources than we have. And we've got a solid defensive system. We've got a world-class striker. As far as the defence is concerned, I think it's the joint best or maybe even the best at the moment in the Premier League, and we are undefeated.
They haven't
all
got over the line yet, have they? I think they're very impressive.
But we're
I
talking about where they are now.
I know.
I think Spurs fans can be happy about their club now than
they,
Arsenal fans.
They've got to start winning pressure games. Like, I thought they were really timid when they lost to Liverpool, weren't they?
Yeah, look, I rate Pochettino. I think he's the real deal. Very impressive. The style of football is excellent, and he's built a collective there that is to be admired. But until they win something, until they can go over that line together, for him and for the players, there'll always be that slight question mark. Then they have to do it, don't they? They have to win the FA Cup really this season. I think that and finish second. They're not going to win the league. I think a runners-up spot would be success of sorts and the FA Cup. But until they win something, you can't put him at the very top of the tree until they've won trophies.
See, I think there's a real, and it's almost going unnoticed, and I think it's one of the big barometers, if you like, by which you can measure Pochettino. They are on course to finish above above Arsenal.
No St Totteringham's Day.
And yet, Spurs fans aren't really talking about it. They're looking up. They're thinking. They're looking at the FA Cup, a winnable home tie against Millwall. And I think, as far as Arsenal are concerned, they could finish outside.
They've just gone out of the Europa League to Ghent.
Yeah, but Arsenal could finish outside the top
four. No, I know. But they've just gone out of the Europa League to Ghent. So Pochettino isn't this super manager. I don't think it was only a couple of weeks ago that they were pretty lame over two legs in a tie that he wanted to win. Let's be honest, Manchester United want to win the Europa League desperately, just in case.
How important is the Europa League to United?
It's pretty important, isn't it? Because I think that they're up against it to finish in the top four. It's going to be really close, isn't it? Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal. I think they're probably the teams battling it out for the fourth. I would put Spurs. I don't think there will be a St Totteringham's Day this year. It pains me to say it. But I think, based on what I've seen so far, I think Spurs have got a better team this year, and City are flying. So, look, they're up against it. They've got a great chance, I think, of winning the Europa League. I think this is a trickier tie than a lot of people imagine. Rostov. Yeah. They're not having a great season domestically, I don't think, but they've got a lot of players that have succeeded in European competition before. I was listening to Andy Brass, who knows his stuff about these things, and he was saying, look, don't write them off. They're not a Mickey Mouse team. So I think, and the travelling will play its part.
You're absolutely right. I think we talked about the fact that Bayern had only lost three games all season. One of those games was to Rostov. Mm. And Rostov are, as you say, a very good side. They can score goals defensively. They're sound. I think as far as Manchester United are concerned, what works in their favour is that they are building mentality. Let's not kid ourselves. They haven't been particularly impressive, but they are undefeated in the Premier League since October. They've lost only once in that time, and that was to Hull. They've got a striker up front who, even if they play badly, knows where the goal is. I think that Manchester United will go there and give a good account of themselves.
Mm. As a former player, Adrian, what did you make of the mayhem at Old Trafford on Saturday with Tyrone Mings walking into Zlatan's elbows?
That's a classic, wasn't it, from Zlatan? Great straight face from him. Fair play. I think that Zlatan should get a 3-game ban for retaliation. The most blatant elbow I've seen in many a season. My view, and it's not a view that everybody shares, my view is that Tyrone Mings didn't mean to stamp on his head. That's how I see it. I think he was off balance. I don't think there was any way that we can prove that he deliberately tried to stamp on his head. He's off balance. He's got to put his foot somewhere. It's happening at a rate of knots. I think it was unlucky. So I think he should get off. That's my personal opinion, because I don't think he can prove it.
But in the heat of battle, now you could see that was a physical battle. They were jabbering at one another. Surely there has to be aggression involved in that challenge.
No, I don't. There was a hefty challenge, wasn't there, in the build-up to that? He cleaned the ball and Rooney. And he did clean Rooney out, but it was fair. He took the ball, and it doesn't look good for him in that regard. But I genuinely don't think you can prove that he deliberately stamped on his head. In my opinion, that could easily have been an accident. If he did do it deliberately, then I'd be calling for a 6-game ban, because you can't stamp on somebody's head. I think it's a very hard thing to prove. I also think Kevin Friend, for his performance, should probably sit out the next 3 or 4 weeks as well. Isn't it time that our referees were held to account? This select group of referees are in a nice, cosy little club, aren't they? How many of them is there? It's 18 of them, I think. If they perform so badly, and it was a shocker of a performance from start to finish, then they need to be stood down.
You're right. It was a career-definingly bad performance by Kevin Friend. But the other thing that struck me, and it's probably a wider issue, that I saw the big players, Rooney, Zlatan in particular, trying to referee the game. They were almost lecturing the official. That can't be allowed to happen, but it is happening, isn't it?
It is. So obviously you think back to Andy Dersa all those years ago when he used to get bullied by the likes of Roy Keane and the big players at United back in the day. It's interesting because Kevin Friend, and I think it was Anthony Taylor as well, the whole stag do thing.
Who on
earth are they taking PR advice from? You know, goodness.
Apparently they were training over there, weren't they?
Yeah, really. They were.
No, it's like that, actually.
Training their arms. I think as far as the timing of that is concerned, horrendous ahead of a Manchester United game. You know, surely someone's got to ring Anthony and say, look, are you sure about this? You know.
What do you think he was talking about with Rooney? What was the conversation?
I think it might have been one-sided. And I think, as you know, you may have been saying to Rooney, look, can you speak a bit quieter, please?
Yeah.
You know, but
they're
just
all playing a role in it. They're all playing a role in it. If you look at it, that Mings incident, Rooney afterwards came out and said, yeah, 5-game ban, no problem. If you saw there's a photograph of the actual moment of impact of the studs on his head.
Yeah, I don't like
and
that.
Rooney has got his back to the incident.
Yeah. And
he's having a go at the referee. So, therefore, he couldn't have seen
it. No, of course he didn't. And look, I hate trial by freeze frame. It doesn't tell the whole story. When you freeze an image and you see studs on someone's head, of course you're going to call. That's a disgrace. This player should be banned for life. I understand that. But you play that at full speed and he's mid-air as he's losing his balance, Tyrone Mings. He's got to put his foot somewhere. And I'll tell you what, it's not that easy to move one leg dramatically to your right.
I'm going to be honest and say I absolutely disagree with you. I think, you know, if that were the case, we'd have footballers stamping on players' heads every week. I think he absolutely can avoid making an impact with a fellow professional. And I think that there is an element. We can never know what's in someone's mind in a situation like that. But I definitely think that as far as Tyrone Mings is concerned, the opportunity to avoid Zlatan's head presents itself and he doesn't take it.
From a football point of view, Adrian, now,
yeah,
I think we're pretty sure that Zlatan's going to miss the Chelsea FA Cup tie, which is a fantastic game.
Yeah, really.
How big an impact will that have on Man United?
Well, we don't know what they're like without Zlatan. He plays pretty much every game, doesn't he? It presents an opportunity for somebody else, Marcus Rashford, to make a mark. It's going to be a really difficult tie, I think, for Manchester United to progress from on the back of travelling to Russia, losing their star striker. I think Chelsea have got to be hot favourites for this particular game. But look, Man United have got the resources. They've got the squad. They've got players who can score goals. Rashford, Martial, Rooney can all play, lead the line. You've got your pick of attacking wide players. So it'll be a really competitive game. But you asked me for who I think will win, it'll be Chelsea.
I think the problem for Manchester United is, you mentioned all those options that they have, but they've got no one who can soak up the pressure quite like Ibrahimovic does and score goals. We talked about the St Etienne game.
Yeah.
They were terrible in that game, but he scored the hat-trick. We talk about the League Cup. Southampton really put them on the rack, but he scored the goal, the free kick, and then obviously the winning goal. He is a guy who buys them time because he soaks up that pressure. He allows other players to be able to perform, and I think he'll buy them time in the transfer window as well. United have won only two of their last 15 games at Chelsea at Stamford
Big
Bridge.
Big game for Pogba.
Big game for him to step up.
I tell you what, Paul Pogba was almost as bad as Kevin Friend in that the weekend. Honestly, he was. If he wasn't Paul Pogba, he would have got the hook not long after half-time. And I do think that's a slight issue. I don't think it's a major problem for Jose Mourinho at the moment. But if you're another player, and I read this morning that Wan-Mata's been subbed 25 times, Zlatan, no times, Pogba, 3 times. When you see a teammate, no matter what they cost, have a stinker, and they still survive and someone else comes off, it does cause a little bit of resentment. I think moving forwards, Jose would... I'm not going to tell him what to do. He knows what he's doing.
Go on, tell him.
But my advice would be to take him off every now and again just to create harmony in the camp, because it will cause friction.
Are we living in an age of almost like the myth of money, the myth of these big transfer fees. Pogba, 89 million. Mm. John Stones around, was it 50 million? Mm. Both struggling. Both don't impose themselves on the biggest games.
Yes, in a word, because if you look at comparable fees paid elsewhere, you talked about Xhaka and how unimpressed you were with him, and they spent 30-odd million pounds. Well, Kante, you know, he was terrific for Leicester last season, and he cost, what, 5-6 million pounds. I think if you look at Victor Wanyama in the centre of midfield for Spurs, 9 million pounds they paid for him, compare that with the Xhaka money, I think, and you're talking about, well, he's only just got there, give him time, for John Stones in particular. Mm. Well, look at Toby Alderweireld, the 11.25 million pounds that Spurs paid for him at centre back. He's possibly been the best defender in the Premier League since his arrival at Spurs. He impressed at Southampton before that. So, yeah, I think we are living in a time of the myth of money. And yeah, I don't want to keep banging on about Spurs, but I'm just using them as an example here. They haven't spent the money that City have, and yet they're above them. OK, City have got the game in hand, but they are above them. They haven't spent the money that Arsenal have spent, but they're above them. They haven't spent the money that Manchester United have spent. And I love that little exchange between Zlatan and Pogba, where Pogba says, you know, that's why they bought him. And Zlatan said, bought me? No, I came for free. They bought you.
Yeah. When we're on about Tottenham, you look at the importance of Harry Kane, who's basically everyone's favourite son-in-law, isn't he? You know, lovely player. What are the underlying lessons? Because here's a boy at 14, youngest in his age group. Was they sing about he's one of our own, and he was actually almost disowned.
Yeah.
No real speed, physicality, agility, something like 30% less than his peers.
Okay.
Yet he has come on, and he is, to me, the most effective striker in the Premier League.
I think he's up there for sure. Statistically,
that
over the last.
Disagrees with you.
Well, I know, yeah.
Well, why not? I would still put Costa and Aguero above him if I was to pick my team. But he would be next in line. I really like Harry Kane. I think he's a brilliant player. Yeah, it tells you that you need to be patient with young players, and that everyone peaks at different times. You can't all be a Dele Alli who's unbelievable at 18. Sometimes you need a little bit of coaching. You need time to blossom and to grow as a player. And you need the backing of a manager. And in Pochettino, he's had, prior to that, was it Tim Sherwood that gave him his chance?
Yes.
He had the backing of Tim Sherwood. And Pochettino has really said, you are my man.
Yes.
And he's responded to that. So yeah, look, it is a lesson, but whether other teams will copy Spurs' mantra, I don't know. But also, Kane is a special talent. I don't think players like him do grow on trees. And I think you could probably look at 19 out of 20 players that you would put on a parallel to him at 19, 20, and the vast majority of them would end up in League One or League Two. So it doesn't happen very often.
It's interesting, though, the point you made about let's not pretend Spurs nurtured, brought him through and had this real plan for him. Adebayor was poor, Soldado was struggling, and they had nowhere else to turn. And here there was this kid who was doing it in the Europa League. And at the time, I remember covering it, the Spurs fans saying, give him a chance. Give him a chance. He can't be any worse than those two. Give him a chance. And it was once Pochettino gave him a chance, and then obviously Pochettino relied on him because he had nowhere else to turn. That they realised that he could do it.
Fans love a homegrown player. Yeah. If a homegrown player delivers work rate and a bit of quality, fans will love it.
He's also done it the hard way, hasn't he? Because if you think about it, okay, they're playing Millwall in the FA Cup on Sunday. That'd be a nice quiet affair, I suspect. Now, Millwall played a huge role in his education as a footballer.
Of course, yeah.
You know, went on loan initially to Leighton Orient. Mm. And I remember talking to him when he was Young Player of the Year at Millwall, and that's a really difficult place to play. Mm. You know, you've got to give everything of yourself, and they absolutely loved him at the Den.
Well, I think that a lot of young players would benefit from having his route to the top, actually. And I think sometimes it is the most talented players that are excused of a loan spell. It's because of their natural gifts, they're fast tracked to the first team without actually growing up as a man and experiencing other sides of football. And Harry Kane did, didn't he? Throughout the leagues, he did at Millwall. It toughened him up, and you could say the same for Dele Alli at MK Dons. He had that's all he knew at the time, but he roughed it. He did the hard yards in League One. So, yeah, look, it goes to prove that the more managers should maybe send them, maybe forget the Championship, send them down to League One and see what they're made of.
I saw Dele Alli as a 16-year-old laughing at big, lumbering League Two defenders at Northampton, it was, who were trying to kick him over the stand.
And it tells you a lot about a player's character when you chuck them in. Now, some players who are brought up through the academy system, will we sent on loan to League One at Millwall, for example, and they'll turn their nose up. They'll be like, what am I doing here? He's no good. What am I playing with him for? Some players will think like that. Other players will think, this is an opportunity to develop my game. And if you've got that mindset and the talent, you'll go far.
You've written about it, haven't you? And you've talked to people and experienced it, and you know it is quite interesting. What you found is that for a lot of players, it is a comfort zone. The Premier League is a comfort zone because PR's look after them, clubs kind of lead them to think that they're in this fantasy. And when they go down to the Championship and to League One, and they get that difficulty, and they haven't got the opulent surroundings that they're used to at Premier League level, you do find out a lot about their character. Kane is somebody who's thrived on that, and that's a big part of why he's been successful.
So you've got a Manchester City who are spending £200 million on their academy. At the moment, no products, although they've got some amazing sort of 15, 16-year-olds coming through. Manchester City at the moment, how will we realistically judge Pep? Does he have to win now, or has he got a year's grace?
I think he has to win now. I mean, because when Harold his arrival, he was almost like a rock star. I thought it was a Bruce Springsteen concert.
Yeah.
And he was seen as the guy who was going to take them a stage further. When you consider where Pep got them, you know, to the semi-finals of the Champions League, I think as far as Guardiola is concerned, it's a fact. They brought him in to take them that 10% further. So, yes, he has to win something. And to be fair, they looked in terrific form at the moment. I think they've got 10 away wins so far this season. No team's ever got more, and you would back them to get even more than that because under Pep, they look good going forward. He's taken bold decisions, but they look a good side under him.
I was really interesting to watch Pep after that, you know, pretty ruthless win at Sunderland, who looked doomed, by the way, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
He was really animated. He got hold of Caballero, and you know, they were obviously going through some form of incident during the game. Okay. He was really effusive towards David Silva. Mm. Pep's, he just, to me, had the look of a manager who's got it between his teeth.
He's enjoying it. He's enjoying this run they're on. I think he's really enjoying the football that they're producing. He said himself that, OK, we went on this amazing start to the season, but we're better now going forward. And I would agree with that. Going forward, they've been so good to watch of late. I do find him a little bit arrogant with the media. I do think he's quite dismissive to journalists, and I don't like that side of him. I think it's garbage, some of the stuff he comes out with defending his goalkeepers and mistakes made by defenders in terms of overplaying. I don't get that part of him, but the bottom line is he doesn't need to touch his front five. No. If he recruits a better keeper and defenders who know how to defend, they'll probably win the title next year because that is all that needs fixing there.
For that to happen, does Sergio Aguero have to adapt to Guardiola's style?
Yes, but at the same time, if you're Aguero, you think to yourself, I'm one of the best strikers in world football. You know, if they don't want me, if they think I'm a substitute, I'll go elsewhere. He is a big enough player to be able to do that because his numbers stack up.
Juventus are desperate for him.
Absolutely. I would imagine that Real Madrid would take him. There is no logic, really, to Real Madrid's recruitment, to be fair, because they've got Karim Benzema is doing very nicely, thank you. But as far as he is concerned, if he's available on the free market and City don't want to play him on a regular basis, yes. OK, Jesus has kind of done them a favour in being injured, but...
I'd like to see the pair of them play together. It'd be great, wouldn't it? I mean, imagine that. Going back to my point about the defence, I think simplistically, he signs a group of experienced defenders who know how to defend and a good keeper that win the league. That sounds good in theory, but what he is fixated on is this notion of defenders being able to play from the back, and we've seen how obsessed he is with that. Now, finding defenders who are grisly, hard-nosed defenders who are brilliant at that aspect of the game and can play football. I tell you what, there are not many of those around. Mm. So he might have to tweak his ideology a little bit.
In theory, he could have taken Virgil van Dijk, but Van Dijk's injured now, so and he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Do you spend the kind of money that Southampton would want, £50 million, on a defender who's been out for 3 months? You don't know what he's going to be like when he comes back. And the big problem, as you rightly say, Guardiola's an idealist. He wants his team to play in a certain way, and it's got to be fantastic and free-flowing. Conte's a pragmatist. That's why he's 10 points clear if they win tonight at the top of the Premier League, because he adapts to what he has. He didn't get the players he wanted last summer, but he worked with the ones he had, worked out a system that got the best out of them, and that's why they're flying. United are the same under Mourinho.
Do you see City winning quite comfortably at Borough, who seem... They have a real problem. They can't score any goals, can they?
You can't seem interested in scoring, can you? Mm. That's the issue for them at the moment, and that's why they are now among the favourites to go down. I can't see them getting out of it, given the lack of firepower that they've got. But in a cup game, I would give Borough a fighting chance. Actually, if you think about who might go through, if there is going to be an upset, maybe it might be at the Riverside. Their eyes might be on Monaco, of course. So we'll have to see.
Mm. I think they've got no chance. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm clutching at straws, really. The form book says City are going to beat pretty much everybody at
and
the moment.
And because they're in such trouble, and they'll be in more trouble probably if Swansea win at Hull this weekend, and they'll then move away. I think, Paul Clements done an amazingly good job there, isn't he?
He's done a terrific job since he's arrived. Straight away, they've looked... You know, when you look at the Liverpool game, you know, on a one-off game, as you rightly say, anyone can fluke a big win. You know, big team underperforms, so-called smaller team turns up on the day, they pull off a shock win. But what they've done is they've built on that, and they have all the defensive organisation that Borough have, but they can score goals. Llorente up front, obviously galvanised by the news that Conte's been looking at him at Chelsea. Yes. It's absolutely been flying. And I think as far as Swansea are concerned, they'll be comfortably...
He's nailed his signings, hasn't he? The left-back Olsen's been excellent. Carroll has just added that little bit of verve and vim in the middle of the midfield.
People forget the impact Makélélé has had. You know, I'd be not surprised if maybe a bigger club tries to pinch him.
There's a good balance in that, because you've got Nigel Gibbs, who was with Brian McDermott for a long time as his number two, was at Tottenham in the academy, a really good development coach. You've got Makélélé's experience, and you've got Clement's modernity. But let's finish this where we began, with Arsenal.
Yes.
Lincoln City.
Yeah.
They can't, can they?
No, I don't think so, but you never know. Arsenal are not a confident side at the moment, and that will be something that the Cowley brothers will look to play on. From Arsenal's perspective, I tell you, I've played in the Premier League, I've played in every league down to non-league, and the one thing that will destroy Lincoln is movement. They're just not used to it. In the conference, forward players, midfield players, the movement is just not on the same planet as you get in the top flyer. Yeah. So if Arsenal pass and move the ball properly, they should win this comfortably. But if there's a lack of confidence, Lincoln are good enough to exploit it. And in my view, we shouldn't see this as Premier League for conference. I see Lincoln, if you stuck them in League One, they wouldn't get relegated. They're a League One side from what I've seen of them. They're not non-league.
What I'm looking forward to is seeing how the Arsenal defence deals with Reed, who's old-school bruiser. He wound up Joey Barton like a treat at Burnley in the last round. That's going to be worth watching, isn't it?
It will be, because Arsenal, they don't like it up them. I was trying not to use that phrase, but, you know, it's the truth.
They got to get the ball first.
What's also quite interesting, you know, about this match is that Wenger, remember at the end of the last game in the post-match, we were talking about Sutton, and he talked about how impressed and surprised he was by the superior fitness of non-league teams.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And I remember when I started writing about this sort of FA Cup tie and the non-league teams, it was Butchers and Bakers and Candlestick Makers or whatever else, and you know, Postman, who sort of doubled up as, you know, part-timers. Now these are players who once were at Arsenal, Rory Deacons, etc., who are in non-league. They look after themselves a lot better. It was a shame that all the piety nonsense overshadowed a group of players at non-league who really are taking their craft very seriously. And if people think it's going to be a walkover, as you rightly say...
Well, they're full-time pros, aren't they? They're full-time professionals, Lincoln. They've got an astute management team who will come up with a game plan.
They'll be really well organised.
Set pieces, I think, are a worry for Arsenal. They don't want to give too many free kicks away inside their own half, because this is a team that are expert. Yeah. Liverpool almost scored a couple of set pieces at the weekend. Origi hits the post. I would suggest that Lincoln are better than Liverpool at set pieces.
And he won't field a strong side. He won't field the A-listers for this team.
Who won't?
Wenger. I mean, I was at the Southampton game, and he basically, Welbeck did very well. Walcott was in their game. You know, he'll field some of the fringe players in their game. I can't see it being a
very, very dangerous.
You don't want to mess around in the quarters.
No. So on that, you're semi-finalists, both of you.
I think Arsenal will get through. I think it'll be tough for them, but I think they'll get through. I think Spurs, undefeated all season at home, they'll get through. City, I think, will get through as well. Chelsea, Man United. I think Chelsea. I'm going to go with Chelsea.
Middlesbrough, Millwall, Lincoln. I can't do it. I think it'll be Chelsea, Arsenal, City, Spurs.
Well, how about this? The Manchester Derby and the North London Derby at Wembley on the same weekend. Lovely. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.